Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, October 27th, 2012. This is episode 921. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow, send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile from Citrix. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Go to ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone, and enter Tech Guy. And by Ford, featuring available sync. Now you can control your media player with simple voice commands. Enjoy your drive while you easily search and listen to your favorite songs. Check it out on the 2012 Ford Focus or at Ford.com/technology. And by RingCentral. We love our cloud-based phone system from RingCentral. Zero startup costs. And RingCentral is just $20 per month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. And when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBooks, and other smartphones. Find out what your gadget's worth at gazelle.com. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy, and it's time to talk about technology. Computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater, digital photography. Those are the most popular topics of discussion. And today, of course, we'll be talking a lot about the new products, the iPad Mini, which was announced, brand new Macs, and Windows 8. And I have in my hot little hands Microsoft's Surface tablet, the Windows RT-based Surface tablet. We'll be talking about that. But before we do, I want to make a disclaimer. I want you to understand what you're getting here. Because, you see, I don't think technology is a team sport. But I apparently am one of the few. It is not a religion. And apparently one of the few. I went to a 49ers game opening day. And there, you know, you have to pick a team. I was not wearing anybody's team colors. And I was treated like a pariah. You know, at least I could have wore, you know, if I'd been wearing the Seahawks colors, they would have hated me, but at least they would have known where I stand. But neutrality at a football game, neutrality is considered the lowest of the low. In religion, you know, people fight. They wars. They for centuries over religious differences. Minor, in my opinion, not being highly religious, minor religious differences. They'll kill people over that. And, you know, unfortunately, there are those, and most of the successful, frankly, bloggers in technology and journalists in technology, treat it like religion. You are either a Mac person or a PC person or a Google person or an Amazon person, and you cannot be more than one, or there's something wrong with you. And see, this kind of against my journalistic ethos. My thinking, what I try to do is just tell you what's the best in any given category, and I don't really care who it comes from because I have no loyalty to a company. I'll tell you the truth. It's something that you probably all should learn. You may love the company, but the company doesn't love you. They're not loyal to you, so why should you be loyal to them? It's just a tool. Now, by the way, I say that, and I say, you know, we should treat this like a tool. It's the best, pick the best tool for the job. But then I realize that there are Black & Decker guys, and there are Stanley guys, and there are Steel guys, and there's religious wars in that too, isn't there? So it must be human nature. Pick a side, then defend it to the death, right or wrong. And I just don't feel like that's what my job is. My job is to look at everything with as open a mind as I can and tell you about the pros and cons. And I say that ahead of time because there are those who tell me that I am a Mac bigot. There are those who tell me that I am a Google bigot. You know, the fan, if you're a fan of one, and I happen to say something bad about that, it's like the football game. I have to pick a side. And I tell you, it's really interesting on Twitter when you pick one side or the other. It drives people nuts. Barca Lounger says, I love it when Leo pretends not to be biased. Yeah. So my point exactly. These small-minded people like Barca Lounger cannot conceive of somebody who would look at something and say, that's good or bad, regardless of affiliation. I choose not to take a side on this one. Having said that, I warn you ahead of time. I warn you ahead of time that this may surprise you. Well, I'll give you an example. For instance, I got in a little bit of a heated fray. We have a show called This Week in Google, and I got a little bit of a heated fray over the new Google Samsung Chromebook. I don't understand Google's Chrome OS. It seems like a bad idea to me, and I likened it to the bad old days when companies sold computers cheaply, knowing they'd sell well, even though they really wouldn't do the job. And I look back to the VIC-20 from Commodore, which was just a doorstop. But lots of families bought it because, oh, we're going to get Junior a computer. It's under $100. More recently, the netbooks, which really was a fad, wasn't it? I mean, people ran out and bought these netbooks because they were a couple hundred, $300. A computer, a Windows computer for $300, regardless of the fact that they were too slow and useless and cheap and junky. And of course, they died quickly, as did the VIC-20, because people eventually realized, well, you get what you pay for. So Google's doing it again, and I feel like it's a bit of a, I don't know, scam. With these Chromebooks, which are very inexpensive, the new Google Samsung Chromebook is $250, but it's a netbook. And it's not even running Windows. It's running what they call Chrome OS, which is essentially a browser. So for $250, you get a computer that can browse, and then you can add plugins to do things. Yeah, you can video edit. You have no storage, so that means all your video is in the cloud, which means if you have bandwidth limits, you're absolutely out of luck, not to mention the speed. You can't run Spotify, you can't run Mog, you can't run iTunes because it's a browser. That's all. And so I think there are, unfortunately, a lot of people are going to run out and get a Google Chromebook and be very disappointed. So I was fairly critical of the Google Chromebook. Now, I haven't played with it yet, but I've played with all the previous versions, so I have a pretty good idea. But we'll see. I'll attempt to preserve an open mind and play with it, review it for you. Nevertheless, my point being, many people think that I'm a Google fanboy, and I think we're shocked when I said that. Shocked. The people who watch Mac Break Weekly said, would you stop talking about Android? We're shocked that you wouldn't show any interest in anything besides the one true computer. So now I say all of that, and I've run out of time, of course, but I say all that in preference to my conversation about this. This is, I'm holding a Windows Surface RT. This is Microsoft's newest operating system and its newest computer, because Microsoft realized that if they really wanted to get some traction with Windows 8, they were going to have to make some themselves. They're still encouraging Lenovo and Dell and everybody else. In fact, there's some beautiful Windows 8 computers coming out. But I have a feeling I have now peered into the mind of Microsoft, and I kind of have a feeling I understand what Microsoft's up to here. This Windows 8 thing is a very big shift for Microsoft, not merely in how it looks, and it certainly is in how it looks and feels. There's no start menu. For the first time since Windows 95, there's no start menu. There's a start screen. They're live tiles. In fact, if you've ever used a Windows phone, this is what the Windows 7 phone and the Windows 8 phones look like. The tiles, the Metro, they don't call it that anymore, but the Metro interface, which is, I think, very innovative, very interesting. And it may be that that's what people first glom onto and say, oh, yeah, I get what Microsoft's doing. It's a new user interface. But no, it's more than that. By the way, what's neat about this Windows Surface RT tablet is it comes with a desktop, and they're bundling the full version of Office in here, everything but Outlook. They have Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and OneNote. And they work beautifully on this touch screen. It's a gorgeous screen. It's quite impressive in hardware terms. But My buddy Paul Thurrott, who does a Windows podcast with me on this network, along with Mary Jane Foley. Paul's a Windows guy. Writes a blog. Is a Win super site for Windows. He's also written all the books. In fact, he's got the new Windows 8 Secrets just came out, so he's an expert on this stuff. He came to the opinion after a while, and I kind of agree with him now that I've played with his Surface RT tablet, that Microsoft's moving away from the desktop, just as Apple is, just as the world is. Not because they say, this is our new business model, but because consumers are moving away from the desktop. And this is a very interesting answer to that question. What do consumers want next from their next computer? It's not quite an iPad. It's much more than an iPad. In some ways, much less than an iPad. And it's not quite a desktop computer, more and less than that. It is something unique and of its own. And here's where the people are going to get very confused. I really like it. I don't mean to confuse you. I know I've picked. I just won't pick a team. I'm sorry. But I'm very impressed by this. There's a lot of innovation in here. I know most of the Mac fan base is just going up and down. In fact, I'll talk about Apple CEO's response to this in just a minute, but I got to take a break. Let's talk about it with you too. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That Beethoven never could do a thing right. I'm a Bach guy. What do you mean, Bach's great? Beethoven's deep. Forget it, you guys. Wagner, that's the guy.
Oh, I love Tchaikovsky. How could you like book on Beethoven?
See, music, I gotta say, music lovers kind of got it more right. There's nobody who says, Lady Gaga's it and forget anybody else. Most people will say, I like a variety. I like to listen to different people, different times, different moods. You don't have those religious wars in music, do you? You have fans. It's interesting. I wonder why that is. You don't, it's not, but it's really, in some areas, religion, sports, and technology. It's like, for most people, it's this or that. No choice. 8888, Ask Leo, that's the phone number. We're going to talk more about the Surface RT, Windows 8, and about Apple's announcements. If you're a Mac fan, good news, because for a long time, it felt like Apple was just really kind of abandoning desktop computing. And this week they announced more new. They basically refreshed the entire line over the last 2 months, with a sole exception of the Mac Pro. And those new iMacs are beautiful, beautiful. 88, yes. John W's got it right. He says Leo's in the pocket of those Altair 8800 people. Yeah. Now there was a computer. 8888. Ask Leo. Ah. Nicknames making a point. In rap, East Coast, West Coast, there is kind of in the rap world, the hip-hop world, there definitely is that deadly, in some cases, rivalry. I do love the Dell XPS-1. They showed it a little bit on the rollout on Thursday. It's basically an iMac. A big 27-inch screen, but it's touch now. And, I kind of bought the idea, and Apple said this and others said this, that you don't want touch on a desktop because your arm gets tired. But as I've used tablets more and more, particularly the iPad, I notice that when I'm using a laptop, I almost invariably will touch the screen. At some point, I reach out, and I think that what we're moving towards is some sort of hybrid notion of both touch and mouse. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. There are times when touch is great, and there are times when touch is not so awesome. So Tim Cook, Apple had its... it's quarterly earnings call. And, the stock went down a little bit because because Apple only made, $8 billion. Golly, that company, that's not going anywhere. Time to sell the stock. Wall Street's amazing. Wall Street, I just don't get it. Anyway, one of the things they asked Tim Cook about, or maybe he volunteered about, is the Windows, Microsoft Surface RT. Let me see if I can find his quote. Because it's a great quote. Oh, where is it? He says it's compromised and confusing. He says, I haven't tried it yet, but... Okay, so problem number one, Tim. Even the CEO of Ford, Alan Mulally, never drives a Ford. Did you know that? I asked him, what do you drive, Alan? He says, I drive everybody else's cars. I need to know what the competition is. I drive everybody else's cars. Tim, you might want to try this. Even though he hasn't tried Windows 8, he says it's compromised and confusing. He compared the Surface tablet to a car that can drive or float but can't do both well. Wait a minute. If I could have a car that could drive and float, I don't care. That sounds good to me. I'm not going to throw that out. Oh, wow. I don't want that. Now, sometimes you want a car that could drive, and sometimes you want a boat. But I wouldn't mind a flying car that could float. I'll take it. You don't want that, Tim? You give it to me. What's interesting is how defensive he is. And that's what I find, I think, telling. Is Apple has of late, and they did this at the announcement on Tuesday, they compared directly their iPad to the Nexus 7, the iPad mini to the Nexus 7. And that's something that Apple doesn't usually do, to go do these head-to-head comparisons. They're very defensive of late. I think they're playing a defensive game. Now, of course, remember they had those Switch ads against Windows, but that was more fun than, like, you see, we're better. It's a little less elegant. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Bill in La Jolla, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing?
I am well. How are you?
Well, I'm much better, but my Galaxy S3 does two things wrong. It eats email, but I don't quite want to cover that yet because I have a workaround.
Okay.
But it will not sync to Google Calendar if I enter an event into it. If I enter it into Google, it'll sync back to my Galaxy, but it won't take from the Galaxy to the Google. Hmm.
I don't know why that's the case. I do that all the time. So I'm thinking it's probably some setting that I'm not sure exactly which one. Make sure you're using a calendar that you do have on your Google Calendar. You know, there is a Samsung calendar that gets created. You don't want to be using that. So look at what you... And also, of course, you have to select your Google account. There's something like that that's going wrong.
If my friend sharing my calendar puts an entry in her, Droid, Droid X, it'll go into Google and come down to me, too.
Yeah.
But so I guess...
Yeah, that's how it's supposed to happen.
Pardon? Yes.
Yeah, it's I'm not going to say you're doing something wrong. I'm just saying that there's some setting or something that you're missing that needs to be.
Okay.
Maybe change the standard calendar. I have it set to, I have a personal calendar, and that's the default calendar in my phone. I love the Galaxy S3. It's what I use.
I love it, too. Is there any way that I can email Google with a...
There is a problem. But you wouldn't email Google in this case. You'd email Samsung.
Oh, Samsung, huh?
Yeah, or your carrier. But I think Samsung's more like, they're the manufacturer. They see, Google, it's a little weird, I understand this, but Android is made by Google and others. It's actually an open source, open handset alliance product which Google kind of runs, but they give it away for free. So they're not really responsible for maintaining it. They might give you some answer, but...
Verizon gave up. I can wait for the upgrade, maybe. I've got a 4.04 version.
Well, here's another thing I would look at. Google just put its calendar. Now, remember, and this is one thing I don't like. Both Verizon and Samsung will take Android and customize it.
Okay.
And so what you're using is probably the Samsung calendar. They call it the S Planner. And maybe that's the issue. Google has just released for free to the Play Store their own Google Calendar. So if you search in the Play Store for Google Calendar, you can use both. They're interchangeable.
Okay.
And just see.
Okay.
I suspect you're saving it to a calendar that is probably not being synced, would be my best guess.
Okay. So how do I get the Google Calendar to make sure I've got
it? It's in the Play Store. Just type Google Calendar. You'll see it says from Google.
Okay, I'll try that. That may work.
I also use an app called Business Calendar that's a paid app. That's my preferred calendar app. But the S Planner is not bad. That's the calendar that Samsung gives you. That's one of the reasons people buy Nexus phones, which is Google's kind of vanilla phone, is because they know they're not going to get carrier or manufacturer customizations. And sometimes that can throw you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. listening. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson, our home theater wizard. He joins us every week to talk about home theater. You can also read him. He answers questions on the secrets of home theater and hi-fi at hometheaterhi-fi.com. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
Good to have you. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I hear you're almost done with Cloud Atlas.
You know, I have this kind of prejudice that generally I like to read the book before I see the movie. I don't know if that's always the best advice, but, you know, The Hobbit's better to read before you see the movie. This Lord of the Rings, better to read.
Right.
So Cloud Atlas, which looks to be a very interesting, I don't know if it's going to be a great movie. It looks to be a very interesting movie.
The reviewers I've heard said, yes, you should read the book first.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I saw the trailer. I saw this looks good. And then I saw it was on Audible and I started listening to it. And it's strange, but they call it
an unfilmable book.
Well, yes.
And yet the Wachowski brothers filmed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A brother and sister.
I'm looking forward to it too.
Yeah.
Brother and sister, I guess.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it too. So I'm almost done with the book. So you haven't seen it yet.
Oh, I haven't. I'm looking forward to it very much.
Almost went last night. And then I saw it was a 4-hour movie or something like that.
Yes,
it's really long.
Yes.
Three hour movie. And it was, you know, there is no late show here in Petaluma because, you know, nobody in Petaluma stays up past 9, so I missed it.
They roll up the streets, huh?
Yeah. I bought the new Panasonic Viera plasma TV, the GT50, not the VT50. You said the VT50 is your favorite plasma out there, your favorite TV out there.
It is, of the current TVs.
But as I've done before, you told me to get the Pioneer Elite, I got one, or the Kuro, I got the Elite. You told me to get the new Kuro. I got the old Kuro. I always buy one down from Scott. You know why? I'm cheap. But it's true in computing, too, that you don't want the highest-end processor. You want the one right below it. That's usually the best bang for your buck. People pay a lot for the premium product.
That's true. And I also never buy the first generation of just about anything.
That's
I wait till,
too.
You know, the second generation when all the bugs are worked out.
Well, and this is I don't know if it's a second generation smart TV from Panasonic, but it is the best smart. You know, I've tried all the smart TVs before and not been very happy with them because they tend to be hard to use. I like Roku or Apple TV. It's just better interface.
Sure.
But
sure.
This one's impressive, and it has Netflix and Hulu and Amazon streaming on it. I've been very impressed.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. You know, I mean,
and Wi-Fi, by the way, so I can just Wi-Fi to it.
That's even better.
Yes.
So yeah. So it's the question of whether or not you want your smart TV functionality, your online functionality of Netflix and Hulu Plus and Amazon and so on. Do you want it in your TV? Do you want it in some separate device? Unless you're buying a very low-end TV, you're going to get it anyway.
Right.
Plus the fact that, as you point out, the user interface in that particular case is very good, and the user interface is going to be different from one device to another. So you may find in one device a better user interface than another. Also, each device is going to give you access to somewhat slightly or somewhat different content. So,
a mess.
It is kind of a mess. On the other hand, I often recommend if you get a Panasonic TV, get a Sony or a Samsung Blu-ray player.
Then both of them, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You might find
and a Roku.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I find I don't need the Roku because most of what the Roku does I could do with the TV. So that was kind of interesting. I did get that Roku stick, and I'm using that downstairs. And that's really great. It's something you have to have a special kind of TV, an MHL HDMI port. So if you have a TV with and only the newest ones do with MHL, or in my case, I have a new Onkyo receiver that has MHL. And you just, it looks like a USB drive, a thumb drive. You just plug it in, and all of a sudden it's got Roku on that HDMI port. It's pretty amazing.
That is pretty amazing. Yeah. I haven't tried it yet, but I really want to.
It's been a little crashy on me. I don't know if there's an overheating problem or the firmware needs to be updated. It seems to crash more. Roku's always crashed a little bit. This one seems to crash a little bit more. So,
well, I think with a firmware update, they'll probably be able to solve that problem.
Yeah. So you have some questions from your viewers. I should let you answer.
Let me just quickly go through a couple of them here.
Yeah.
Speaking of getting one TV versus another, Todd Crump I can't see where he's from, but he inherited an old, nice 60-inch Kuro plasma Pioneer.
Lucky boy.
From his folks.
Yeah.
And he posted it on Craigslist, said it's 4 or 5 years old. Shouldn't I get the newest thing? it's a no-brainer to sell that and buy something new, right? And I say, well, no. If you don't care about 3D, which the Pioneer doesn't have, and you don't care about smart TV, which you can get, as we've been talking about, on a Roku stick or a Roku box or any Blu-ray player these days, or a game console, just about anything else, I'd absolutely stick with the Kuro. Now, the Panasonic VT50 and almost GT50 are approaching the level of Kuro performance, but I still haven't found anything that beats the Kuro. I still haven't. So I'm telling this guy, no, keep it, unless 3D is really important to you, which it isn't to a lot of people. So there's a good chance that it won't be to him, and he can add smart TV functionality on another device. So absolutely keep the Kuro, in my opinion. I mean, that's what I still watch.
Yeah, I have a Kuro downstairs, and you know, it's interesting, the Viera, the brand new Viera is 3D, but it didn't come with any glasses at all.
No, none of them do. The VT50 might come with one pair or two.
Why waste the money giving people glasses? If they want 3D, they can go get them.
Yeah, in your case in particular, you know, you don't like 3D particularly. So, you know, why would you even want them?
Thanks for saving me the money. They would just gather dust in the cabinet.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So you did the right thing by getting the GT50.
Yeah.
Which is also THX certified, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, yeah. And I can't tell. I mean, it looks very nice to me. It's very thin. Yeah. It's nice to see a plasma screen that is as thin as the new LCD screens, and with the thin bezel and everything. It just really is pretty. They really
do. Oh, yeah.
Nice
beautiful.
Job. Yeah.
Well, my offer is still open if you want me to do
I
a
I am.
California.
You're going to stay at my place. We should mention Scott's going to be doing the show next month on the weekend of, what is it, the 10th and
11th? 17th and 18th.
17th and 18th. He's going to be doing the show.
And yep,
so come
to
up,
that.
Stay in my place, and while you're there, calibrate the TVs. That'd be great.
I'd be happy to. Yes, absolutely. You know, I have to say, calibrating TVs for me is like a Zen activity.
You like it?
It's actually relaxing.
Well, I'll leave $10 on the dresser as you can just pick it up on the way out.
No, just saving me the hotel bill is fine.
There you go. There you go.
Okay, one other quick question. I know I only got a couple minutes. Somebody, Dietrich Snuffer asked me from Roanoke, Virginia. He wants to get a projector, and he wants to use it for rear projection. Now, not many people do this. They get a projector, they put it in the back of the room, it projects onto the screen. You're doing this with your Epson, right?
Yeah.
So instead, he wants to get this projector just like the Epson, something like it, and put it behind a translucent screen.
Yeah, sometimes I've seen people do that.
It's very common, and he wonders, you know, is this common? And it's almost universal. Just about every projector has an item in the menu that says, where are you going to put it? Are you going to put it in front of the screen? Are you going to put it behind the screen? Are you going to hang it upside down from the wall, from the ceiling? You can do any of those things with just about any projector, and it will automatically adjust the picture to make it right for that orientation. What you do need is a translucent type of screen, and that can get pretty expensive. Stuart makes one called Star Glass, which is a plexiglass kind of a thing. And you have to mount it in the wall. It's a real construction project. It's not a simple thing. Plus, you have to have enough room behind the screen to put the projector. So it's not cheap, but almost any projector will do it.
Scott Wilkinson, Home Theater Geeks, his podcast every Monday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on twit.tv. We'll see you next week, Scott.
You bet.
Never will understand that fashion trend. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. If you'd like to know more about tech, if you want to choose a side. We're talking about the Windows RT Surface, Microsoft's new tablets. They, you know, there are others making tablets, by the way. This is not the only Windows RT tablet. But this is one that's being sold at the Microsoft stores. They popped up. They call them pop-up stores, 32 of them around the country, along with Lenovo and Acer and Dell and lots of other companies. Not all of them making tablets. Most of the usual suspects are making Windows 8 desktop PCs. But the tablets are, I think there's a wait-and-see attitude from these guys, partly because Microsoft themselves are in it. And I think some of them feel like, boy, you know, I wouldn't want to compete against Apple on the iPad Why should I want to compete against Microsoft on the Surface? Surface is great, not perfect. There's lots of little things that, you know, it's a first generation. I'm worried a little bit about reliability of these keyboards, you know, how well they'll hold up. The tablet itself seems well made. It's a little heavy. It's weird, too, to play with a widescreen tablet. The shape and heft of it are a little bit more than the iPads, thicker. Battery life won't be probably iPad-like, more like 8 hours, maybe less. I've just got it, so I haven't found out myself. I'm running it now on battery, charged it once, so I'll get some idea by the end of the day. And there's some little things I just noticed. For instance, there doesn't seem to be an ambient light sensor. So you set the screen's brightness, but it doesn't automatically sense how bright it is in the room and change that. Most phones do that. Many tablets do that. You know, I don't know if that's the end of it. It's certainly not a deal breaker. It's just something to be aware of. There are areas where they can improve it. Where I think there is little room for improvement, where I'm very impressed on Windows 8 is the interface. I was impressed with Windows Phone 7. I thought that Metro interface was a really nice reinvention of how a touch screen might work. It works even better on a computer like this with a lot of real estate on the screen. I have to say, this is a great interface. You've got these little tiles that are some of them live. I can see my calendar, my emails, scroll through it, tweets, messages. They have some really nice little Microsoft apps that go here. The travel app, for instance, is just gorgeous. I think that this is an impressive product. Very, very impressive product, especially for a company like Microsoft that's not known for really innovating, crazy innovation. This is a brand new, fresh idea for Microsoft, and I'm thrilled to see it, frankly, just because I think the competition's great. It's great to have choice, isn't it? 8888 Ask Leo, that's the number. Now, I know people are going to say, well, should I get one? And that's I'm not ready to talk about that yet. I want to play with it for a while. I don't like to make strong recommendations until I've had some time with something. But I've played with it enough over the last day. I got it yesterday. To say it is a solid entry for Microsoft, and impressive and absolutely innovative. Paul in Lafayette, California, listening to News Talk 910 in San Francisco. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Paul.
Hey, Leo.
Welcome.
Hey, I have a quick question regarding my new Android phone. I had an iPhone S4 forever, truly loved it, and then I switched jobs and then unfortunately had to switch phones. I now have a Motorola Droid 3, and the problem I'm having is syncing the calendars. It seems like I can sync calendars, but I have to do it manually.
It's funny. There's a second call of the day with the same problem, a Droid or Android problem with calendar syncing. What's happening?
I'm baffled. I've been online. I've gone through the different forums, and they'll tell you how to set it up. But when it comes to syncing them, I haven't found that. You know, I can do it manually.
You've attached it, logged into a Google account, right? You have a Gmail account?
Exactly.
And you're logging into your Gmail account. It's in the settings under accounts. You add your Google account.
Correct.
Yeah, and that should add not only your Gmail. And are you getting Gmail in your mail?
I'm getting the Gmail, and that has no problem coming through. But whenever I make any changes, either on my desktop or on my phone, in order to get the two to sync, I've got to do a manual connection. I've got to,
That's not how it's supposed to be, obviously. In fact, unlike the original iPhone, the idea of hooking it up to a desktop on Android, it's just you don't do it.
Right.
You know, it's not part of its heritage. So I'm not sure what's going on. And you're not, as I said, somebody else just called with the same problem. I haven't had any difficulty. In fact, my general recommendation, even with an iPhone, is to use Google Calendar, contacts, and email, and have those sync from your desktop to your iPhone. It seems like that works really, really well. And I'm just not sure what's going on. You might try, and the nice thing is this won't damage any data. You might try deleting that Google account in settings and starting over. Put a new, log in again and see what's going on. How long has this been going on? Nope, I think I lost him. Or maybe I just can't hear him. Yeah, you know what? I'm having that problem, Kyle, where for some reason... There I go. Okay. How long has this been going on, Paul?
It's been about 2 months. And it's one of those things, of course, before I lived with my calendar on my iPhone. Now that it's proven to be, less than convenient to use...
No, yeah, that's a big deal. And I have to say, that's to me critical, not just calendar, but contacts. I remember the early days of cell phones where you get a new cell phone, you'd have to enter in manually the numbers that you wanted to dial. I don't want to do that anymore.
Sure.
Go to settings, accounts, and take a look at the synchronization. Manually sync. I wonder if sync is turned off. I'm just looking at my... Now, I don't actually like the Droids very much. I'm not a big Motorola fan. I'm using... this is a Galaxy Note that I'm using right now. I'm just looking... but it's roughly the same because it's all Android. I'm going to the accounts settings. You should be able to just try a manual sync. Just see if that does anything. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. The answer is I don't know. It should work. It does work for most people. I'm not sure why it's not syncing. Let's see. Yes. Yeah. Now, do you see a sync error when you go to your account?
No, I can. I don't have any errors or anything like that. When I go to the account, it'll say, tap here to sync, and so I'm doing a manual sync.
Yeah, and is that working?
That does work.
Oh, okay. Well, then there's some, for some reason, syncing is not happening automatically. I would look back in your settings and make sure that it's working. Now, somebody's just given me a link to the Android forums in the chat room that says, let's just take a look at this. Android calendar app not syncing with Google Calendar help. So it sounds like this might be, I'll tell you what, we'll put this in the show notes. It's a forum posting. And make sure you've turned sync on for your calendar, somebody says. There's a setting in the calendar app itself that tells you which calendars to sync. Make sure you've selected the calendars you want to have synced. That's in the calendar app itself. And again, as I told the previous caller, I would absolutely take a look at Google's own calendar app, which they've just made available for the first time on the Play Store. You're not stuck with the Motorola app anymore. Ensure that background data is turned on in accounts and sync. Ensure that auto sync is checked. Check the account associated with the calendar you're attempting to sync and make sure that's the same account. Ensure that sync calendar is checked. Click sync now. If the sync is still not working, apparently there's an app, SYNKER. SYNKER, it's a free app in the Play Marketplace that apparently is helpful in that regard. I haven't tried that, but maybe for both of our callers. Syncer, the sync widget. You shouldn't need this. But maybe this is more widespread problem than I realized. Our show today brought to you by ShareFile. I do use ShareFile with the radio stations. This is how I share the commercials. Used to be, people would share files by sending attachments. And there are a couple problems with that. First of all, it's not private. It's not secure. Those attachments, anybody can read them along the way. But also, bounce backs are a real issue. Because nowadays, you're sending files that are much larger than just, a few hundred kilobytes. And in many cases, anything bigger than a few megabytes is going to get bounced back. So this is the better way to do it. ShareFile.com, designed for over 30 different industries. It's compliant with all the major federal regulations, things like the HIPAA regulations, the privacy regulations for medical. Some of the biggest companies, most of the Fortune 500 companies, in fact, are using ShareFile. Let me show you my ShareFile account. So one of the things when you sign up, you can customize it with your logo and everything. There's my account. I'll just log into it here. And you see I have folders that I'm syncing. I also have an address book, which is truly amazing, of people that I'm syncing with. That's fantastic. I can see my users. They're right, Let's see. Let's manage users. Oh, that's interesting. I'll browse the users. So here's all the users. And I have different permissions for different people. These are the people I've shared with. Makes it very easy. Let me show you how it works. And you can share with anybody, by the way. And they don't need to have an account. So here's the users of these particular folders. You see what control we get. Let's say I want to share this file. Now, there is an Outlook plugin. I can send it just like email. Or you can press the send button, send it from the web page just like this. But I like to do this. I like to get a link. And when I create the link, I have some settings that I can use, which is really cool. I can have it email me when the software or the file has been downloaded. I can say I need them to enter their name and address, so I'll know who downloaded it. I could say, and by the way, that's great. So I know I get an email that says, oh, yeah, you know, KJJJ just downloaded the commercial you sent them. And that's good to know. If I don't see that, then I know they didn't. I can say when it expires. Most of my commercials are good for only a week, so I set that expires after a week. But you could have it, hey, that's always good, or a year or a month or a day. How many downloads they, you know, you can only download this once. These are all things that the various regulations might require or your need for privacy might require. Then you click send files. Now, what you're going to get is a link. And I love this. Let me go up here. This link, you just attach it to your email, and I'll show you what happens when they enter it. They don't need to sign up for ShareFile or anything. They just get a page with my logo, with your logo, obviously not my logo in your case, and a download link. They just press the button. Okay, I'm going to be blunt. Even the dumbest users can figure this out. So if you're sending files to people who are confused, this is great. I'm not going to say anymore. I don't want to insult anybody, but I got to tell you, sometimes I'm sharing files with people who aren't, they're not dumb. They're not super, you know, techie. And this is, I mean, they get this. They go, oh, I press that big download button. Yes, you will get the file. I love a share file. I know you're going to like it too. That's why we got a big 30-day free trial for you. Visit sharefile.com. Use the promo code TECHGUY, and you can try it free. You don't have to enter in your industry, but if you do, you'll get it customized for that industry, which is great, in every kind of area, which is really nice. It's really a great way to share files. You can access your share files anytime, anywhere. They have smartphone apps, tablet apps. Really nice. Try it free for 30 days. I ask you, just use the offer code TECHGUY when you do it. TECHGUY. So that you give us credit for it.
All right, Leo, you're on.
Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet. We can talk cell phones, home theater, digital photography, all that jazz. Phone number is 8888-ASK-LEO. Google was going to have a big event on Monday in New York City to announce new tablets, probably a new Android phone. You know, Google does these Nexus phones, as I mentioned, which are kind of generic reference design Android phones without any carrier junkware or manufacturer junkware on it. But as you probably know, a big storm is headed New York City way, Hurricane Sandy. And they thought it prudent to put off the announcement in New York City for Monday morning. Boy, I hope everybody will be okay through that. Hurricane Sandy kind of rained on Google's parade, if you will. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number if you want to talk about computers or the internet or cell phones or Windows 8. Of course, Apple had its own little shindig this week. Wow, I guess, you know, this is probably going to be the way it is from now on, which is because these devices are not really like computers of old. They're the kinds of things you might give somebody for the holidays. You know, you're not going to give somebody a desktop computer for Christmas. Well, maybe you would, but you're much more likely to give them a tablet or a smartphone or that kind of thing. So I think the industry has realigned itself. It's taken a little while, but Apple, Google, Samsung, Microsoft have all had big events announcing new products for the holiday buying season. Google's turn was Monday. Samsung had its event, I think, didn't they? Or is it coming up next week? It's so confusing. And Apple's second event of the fall was just this past Tuesday. The first event, we thought, oh, that's going to be the big event, the announcement of the iPhone 5. They announced new iPods at that time as well. That'll be the big event. They'll do some minor, small event in October announcing an iPad mini. That'll be, you know, just to fill in the gap. Woo, it's the biggest announcement I can remember from Apple. They didn't just announce an iPad mini, although that's pretty good. 7.9-inch screen, $329 for the base Wi-Fi model. 1024 by 768. It's not a Retina display. It's just a small iPad. But oddly enough, they also replaced the iPad, big iPad. And I think this shocked people, certainly shocked me. The iPad third generation, which was announced this year and started shipping in the spring, is no longer available. That's it on that. Goodbye. Nice to know you. We now have the fourth generation iPad. The new iPad's the old iPad, and now there's a new iPad. The new iPad is pretty much like the old new iPad, except it's faster, lots faster. And I think they did that because the iPhone 5 was much, much faster. And the truth is, I didn't notice it, but some have complained that the third generation iPad, boy, this naming and the nomenclature stuff is going to get tricky. The third generation iPad, the first Retina iPad, was a little sluggish. All those pixels on that 10-inch screen, 10.7, what is it? Yeah, something like that, a screen. 9.7, I guess it is we're making it a little sluggish. So they put in this new processor that's a lot faster, supposedly. They also took this opportunity to eliminate the 30-pin connector on this iPad. And Apple will probably quickly move its entire product line to the new Lightning connector that you saw first on the iPhone 5. The iPad mini has it. The current iPad, the iPad fourth generation, has it. And I'm sure they'll replace it with, you know, on all their devices over a fairly quick period of time. That might make sense. You don't want to have two different connectors. But they didn't. That wasn't all. No, they also announced new Mac Minis. They also announced a 13-inch MacBook Pro with Retina display. Beautiful. I tell you, I have a 15-inch MacBook Pro with Retina, and it's my favorite computer. Just gorgeous. Super thin. Like its big brother, the 13-inch lacks an optical drive. No more super drive, no more DVD player, no more burning, no more music playing. I think that, and you know, for people who are saying, when's Apple going to do a Blu-ray? I think they're not even going to have any physical players at all, and no more optical players at all. Apple's really kind of, and they've done this before. Remember, they were the first to get rid of floppy disks on the iMacs. I think it's probably the case that we can now say goodbye to physical media. Everything's downloaded and digital now. So a new MacBook Pro, new Mac Minis, and then the big surprise, a new iMac. Remember, people have been calling. I feel bad now. People have been calling over the last couple of months saying, I hear rumors, a new iMac. And I said, well, I don't know. Maybe. I don't think so. Maybe. Well, yes. And truth is, I had seen pictures of this, and I didn't believe them. I thought, oh, no, yeah, that's somebody's Photoshop. That's not. They can't make a 5-millimeter thick iMac. They did. 5 millimeters. Now, that's at the edge, and that's a little deceptive. You might want to go in and look at it, because they only show pictures of it from the edge. But if you get behind it, it's not 5 millimeters all the way. Is a big bulge in the back. Well, there has to be. Come on. You know, we don't live in a magic world where you don't need to put electronics in these things. There is it's kind of like the Airs, where the edge is thin, like a blade, but then the back is a little bit chunkier, a little bit fatter. But that's fine. I mean, of course they had to do that. And the footprint isn't reduced because you still got that stand. Although I should point out, you can remove the stand on iMacs. There's a Visa compatible mount in the back there, so you could put a mounting arm. And I tell you, mount this on the wall or with a mounting arm, and that's going to be gorgeous. That is a gorgeous computer. 21 and 27 inch models. 21 inch comes in November, the 27 in December. Apple may have kind of implied that they're abandoning desktop computing. They didn't do a new Mac Pro, but they still, I would say, are leaders in the most attractive desktop designs. The iMac is 14 years old now. Remember the Bondi Blue that came out in 98? And this is very futuristic looking. Just beautiful. So Apple has now, in the last 2 months, refreshed every single product they make, except for the Mac Pro, their high-end kind of power tool for pro users. That's pretty amazing. That's pretty amazing. They got in a little bit of trouble from Wall Street. I don't, you know, Wall Street is so, you guys are so finicky. They only made $8-some billion in the last quarter. Golly, that's 3 months, kids. That's almost $3 billion a month. That's not profit. I'm not talking revenue. But Wall Street was disappointed because the margins were lower. And Apple said, yeah, we may be heading toward a little bit of a lower margin period. That may, in fact, happen. We don't make quite as much. They still have better margins than any PC manufacturer. Absolutely. They make a ton of money on every bit of hardware. That's why the iPad Mini is only is not $250 or $200. It's $329 because they want to make their $100. And I can't, you know, if you've got shareholders, you have a responsibility to do that. Most of the Wall Street analysts said when the stock price tumbled because Apple's it was merely an advisory from Apple that in the next quarter their margins may fall. Wall Street, I don't think, was it 5%? Some small bump on the stock price. And most of the analysts said, this is a buy opportunity. In other words, they said, just buy more. That just means buy more. So the price will go back up. If that's what you care about. I don't think that there's any indication Apple's not doing very, very well. And what they've done, essentially, is they've said, we're going to make all our money in the first quarter, as we did this year and the year before and the year before. Wait till the first quarter results. They'll be astronomical because of all these new hardware. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yes, please.
Hey, thank you're busy. You so We're much, all Chris. Busy.
You're a gentleman and a scholar. He's a scholar. Thank you. So I just got invited. I'm not going to be there because I'm going to be in Australia, but Ford is showing off the Energy Fusion in San Francisco while I'm gone, like on the 14th or 15th. This is the car I want. I'm going to get on the list for this. I know I'm... Okay, don't laugh at me. So I'm driving a 2010 Mustang, and while I love the power of that V8, it's the GT 5.0, and it's fun, you know, when I merge onto the freeway with my son as we're going to school, and I pin his head to the back of the seat. I admit there's... I like that. But I think it's time to be a grown-up. I am, after all, I will be 56 at the end of this month. I think it's time to get something a little more sensible. The good news is, and this takes the sting out of it, the new Ford Energy, like all, by the way, all the new Fords have sync available Ford Sync in my Ford Touch. So I'm happy about that because the truth is, even if I'm driving an eco-friendly 108-mile-per-gallon plug-in hybrid, which, by the way, has torque that is absolutely better than the eight-cylinder Mustang. I can still pin his head to the back of the seat because of the electric engine. I get to rock the tunes in my Energy, my Fusion, because of Ford Sync. Ford Sync is so cool. It lets you keep your hands on the wheel, your eyes on the road, and yet totally control your entertainment experience. I am so fond of the sync. You can browse your music collection by voice. You say genre, album, artist, playlist, or song title. You could say, you know, Lady Gaga, Born This Way, and it'll play it. If you like a song, you could say, play similar music. It'll play more like that. That's cool. It's smart. You can voice control music no matter how it's stored on your smartphone via Bluetooth streaming on a USB drive. You can literally... All of these new vehicles have USB ports. You can plug in a USB drive and it would play the MP3s on it. It'll index them, and you can call for them by name. You don't even... It's kind of mind-boggling. Of course, iPod, iPad, iPhone, too. And by the way, it works great with all the new devices, including the iPhone 5. I tried it, and it works beautifully. There's new... this iTunes tagging is cool. You can be listening to HD radio and... and say, I want that when I get home. Can I buy that song? And it will save the song for you. Bluetooth and Pandora. Now, there's a combination. Your smartphone has Pandora on it. Oh, you're going to love this. You can listen to Pandora in your car. I listen to Stitcher, Pandora, Spotify, and you can control Pandora and Stitcher with your voice. Sync speaks your language, as they say. So keep your hands on the wheel, your eyes on the road. Drive a Ford, whether it's that hot Mustang or the sensible Fusion or the 2012 Ford Focus. Oh, they have so many great vehicles. Try it one today at a Ford dealer near you. And learn more at Ford.com/technology. Yeah, I want to get the energy. Let's see if that happened here. I don't know if they're yet. Yeah, see, I don't think they're showing the plug-in. The energy is the plug-in. Yeah, they're not showing it yet. They're showing it. There it is. That is a sweet car. By the way, I think I'm right. This is the Lincoln body. It's a Lincoln chassis. So it's a very comfortable car. 108 miles per gallon E, the MPGE. Unbelievable. See, I just call for it and it plays it. Hello. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, hello, hello. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. Paul's in Lafayette, California. Hi, Paul. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello. Paul, are you there?
Nothing.
He said a new Android phone. Is this the same guy I talked to with the syncing calendars on the Android phone? I guess I already talked to him. That's why. I'm just not paying attention. Sylvie in Ventura, California. Now we got somebody. Hi, Sylvie.
Hi, Leo. How are you? Can you hear me?
I'm great. Yes.
Okay. So I have this Galaxy S3 phone, which I love.
It's Android phone day. Okay, go ahead. I love my Galaxy S3 too. It's wonderful, wonderful phone.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. But here's the thing that I can't figure out how to do is how to store a signature into that I could use when texting or when handling email from my phone, because I have to have a kind of a complicated signature with name and company number. Number and all that stuff.
Yeah, not like a graphic of your handwriting signature, just an email signature, you know, license 3636363, California Department of Real Estate kind of thing.
Exactly, California Department of Real Estate.
So yeah, it's in the email program. So, which depends what email program you use. There's Gmail, of course, and there's also a standard email. Yeah.
You use
Gmail. So it's in the Gmail app. So you go into the settings. Now I know why you're confused. It's a little non-obvious. So the key on this is you're going to go to the menu. So you press the menu button, go to settings, and then you'll see general settings, but you don't want that because the signature is per account. So you'll tap your email account.
Okay.
I think I'm right. Wait a minute. No, I'm wrong. That's for notification. No, there it is. Yes, I'm right. So then you'll see if you have multiple, the reason they do that is if you can have different signatures for each Gmail account. So if you have just one, you just tap that one and then you can put in, then tap signature and you could put in, I have a ridiculously long signature. It has my name, it has, you know, my address, my phone number, all that stuff. So you totally could put in a big long signature. And then every time you create an email or respond to an email, it'll append that signature. So again, just real quickly, go to the email program. You don't do it in the settings for the phone. You go to the email program, in this case Gmail. You tap your account, not general settings, and then there's a signature button right there. And that is one of the first things I do because, you know, every phone company, it's so annoying, has a default signature that usually is something like, sent from my fabulous Samsung Galaxy S3. And I don't want that in my email. You always know somebody hasn't customized their email signature when it says something like that. This came from my great new iPad. It just works. That's when you want to change it. So I always do that. Hey, let's say hi to Ellie. Haven't talked to her in ages, from Honolulu. Hello, Ellie.
Hi, Leo. I have so many questions that we'd have to start our own show together. So
we should do that. Ellie does a website. For people visiting Hawaii who are have disabilities or are blind, Hawaii Through Our Eyes, is called, is it Giant Dolphin?
Yep, giantdolphin.com. We still need to work on it, but our iMac, our main iMac, has had problems, so we have to... We had a hard drive put in, and then now something else is wrong with it.
There's always something in there.
I want one of the new ones.
Yeah, aren't they pretty?
Yeah. I'm drooling all over the place.
It's just a shame that we just don't have unlimited budgets for our gadgets. That's by the way.
That's what I say.
You want to know how I became the tech guy? Because back in 1978, I kind of saw this coming. I said, but wait a minute, I want to have all the new stuff. How can I possibly afford that? And I thought, well, if I get into the business, at least nobody can complain when I buy it.
Yeah, that's true.
A little I know, I wouldn't be making any money. No, I'm doing all right now, and I do, in fact, it's one of the things I kind of take pride in, is I don't do loaners whenever I can avoid it. For instance, this Surface RT, I went online and ordered it like a normal person. Same thing with my iPads. Went online, ordered the iPad Mini. I'll have that next week. And the reason is I want to feel the pain. It's hard for me to recommend something unless I've paid for it with my own money.
So were you able to get a new iPad for the person that wanted on your MacBook Weekly? Or did you have to send them the old new iPad?
That was a little bit of a source of frustration for me, because we'd already bought the iPads, right? And it was engraved. Worse than that, we'd autographed it. So he got an iPad 3. But the next one, we're going to do another giveaway on our shows, and that will be the new iPad. We actually still
Maybe I could win one of those.
Yeah! Yeah, you know, the truth is, I know people are feeling bad because Apple replaced the iPad 3 in 7 months. Now, by the way, that's normal in technology. It's just not normal for Apple.
Right.
And there's an unwritten agreement from Apple, basically, that we will replace iPhones and iPads once a year, no more. And so that's all. It was just kind of everybody assumed that they're good for a year. And in this case,
right. Not.
I don't think Apple will do that again, by the way. I think that was just the process of getting it into a fall announcement, and now it'll be every fall we'll get new iPads.
Now, I have a question about the RT.
Okay, I've got it right here. What do you want to know?
I want to know about the accessibility. I haven't seen anything written about it. I don't know if it works with speech. I don't know about magnification. And there's no place where I could go in and play with one because we don't have those pop-up Microsoft stores.
Yeah.
So I was just curious, you know, from a tech point of view.
Yeah, so there is a hole in the settings. There's a whole ease of access section, and I'll read you what you can do. It's basically the same as Windows 7. There's high contrast mode. Those are people with low vision who need a special high contrast mode. There's a magnifier mode, but it doesn't. Now, I'm reading it. Your display doesn't support this setting. So on the tablet, on the Surface RT tablet, you cannot magnify it. You can pinch, though. You've got pinch to zoom. So just as you would on an iPad, an iPhone, or an Android phone, you can make things bigger by zooming. It does have narrator. Pressing Windows volume up will turn on narrator. You can also change the cursor thickness. So there is accessibility. I believe, Ellie, that Microsoft is very committed to accessibility. In fact, I remember a couple of years ago meeting a woman who had just taken a job at Microsoft, and I was really impressed. Her job, she was an expert in accessibility. She'd been studying it for years academically and had worked in industries, you know, encouraging them to understand the needs of people with various disabilities and making sure technology supported those people. And Microsoft hired her to across the board promote accessibility. So it wasn't just the Windows team. It wasn't just the Surface team. It wasn't just the Xbox team. She was being given a portfolio from Microsoft. And it was my understanding. They said, you go, girl. You go tell everybody. You crack the whip and your word is law. Make sure accessibility is built into our products across the board, appropriate accessibility. And I think that that's, in fact, what they're doing. So ease of access is a setting on the Surface RT. Again, contrast. It says your display does not support make everything on the screen bigger, so you can't increase the DPI. That will be a feature of Windows 8 Pro, however. And they do have Narrator. That's their screen reader. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 88. Thank you, Ellie. 8888. Ask Leo. More calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. My phone number, 888-827-5536, 8888. Ask Leo. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. We have a great website, where, you know, by the way, all the show notes go there. So if you hear something and you say, oh, and you're in the car, what was that? Just go to techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com. And that every show, there's 921 of them. Every show is there. Questions and answers from each. We have synopses, but after the fact, a couple of days later, there'll be video of me answering the question, so you can hear the question literally and my answer. And then, most importantly, you can also comment, and I hope you will. If you've got an idea or a suggestion or a better way to do it, put it in the comments, because I think that'll make this a very valuable site. No charge to use that. I promise, free forever, free access to that. TechGuyLabs.com. 8888 Ask Leo, though. That's the best way to interact. Denise in Santa Clarita, California. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy.
Hi, happy Saturday to you.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you. I have an Office Max brand engaged wired keyboard that is connected to my 2009 Mac Mini with Lion operating system.
Okay.
And this keyboard was a replacement from my other keyboard that was also doing the same thing. What the keyboard is doing is that it will work for a couple of days, typing away and stuff, and then it'll stop responding, and I can't type anything. So then I have to shut down my Mac Mini and start it up again, and then my keyboard works until another couple of days, and it happens all over again.
Yeah,
what's
it's the Mac Mini, and you got to take that to Apple. You've done the right thing, which is just assume, or at least try, a new keyboard, because that's the easy thing to replace, right?
Uh-huh.
But now you can go to Apple and you say, look, I've tried it with two different keyboards. Same thing happens. It's something in the Mac Mini, whether that's it might be a bad solder. It might be software. I'm not sure. You know, one thing you could try, it's kind of a pain, but you can boot up your Mac Mini from the original system disk and then see if the keyboard will fail. How long does it take before it fails?
About 3 days.
Yeah, so you don't want to. That's not going to help. Because, you know, I'm just thinking, if it's a software problem, by using the original boot disk, you will eliminate whatever software issues there are on the hard drive, and the boot disk should be perfect because, of course, it came from Apple. But that's not, you're not going to want to do that for 3 days. So I would just call Apple.
And what do I tell them?
Just what you told me. And the key is, and they should listen and understand this, you've tried another keyboard. It doesn't matter what the keyboard is. You've tried another keyboard. And it didn't work.
And so you think it could be a bad solder or something?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they'll know better. But how old is the Mac Mini?
It's 2009, so...
Yeah, so it's out of warranty is the point. So it's not wireless, right? It's physically connected. I'm sorry, did you say yes? It's physically connected?
It's wired.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, wireless sometimes drops connection, but wired should not.
Okay. I have another quickie question. What is the, how much memory should I have in reserve for my Mac Mini to run efficiently?
You're using Lion. I think 4 gigs is plenty. How much RAM do you, wait a minute. You said in reserve, that means you're talking about your hard drive?
Yeah, the memory, because I have 319 gigabytes. And I have only 46 gigabyte left.
You're fine.
Oh, I'm good. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll do that. I'll call Apple then.
Yeah. Or if you have an Apple store, you do it nearby in Santa Clarita.
Yeah.
Bring it to the Apple store. Make an appointment with the genius. And even when stuff's out of warranty, since you sound like a very nice person, often the genius has a lot of leeway. The phone, not so much, but the genius has a lot of leeway. And the genius can say, let me take it in the back. The problem, it's so difficult when something fails after 3 days, because they're not going to sit there bang on it for 3 days. When a problem is intermittent or it takes a while to surface, it's difficult to explain. You know, one thing you might want to try, I know you've upgraded the operating system several times. You're up to Lion now. You probably did what most Mac users do, which is just take the new operating system and upgrade the old one. And you've probably done that, if you got in 2009, what is it, Leopard? You've probably done that a few times now. And that could be source of the problem. It could be that different keyboard drivers are interacting poorly. So another thing that would be worth trying, and I know it's a pain, but I think would work in this case, is take your data off, back up all your data, all your personal stuff, make sure you have your install disks and everything, and then wipe the disk and do a clean install of Lion. Do a completely fresh install of Lion. So there's nothing left over from previous versions of the operating system. That might help. Oh, CMC Tech in our chat room says, oh, I'm in the computer repair industry. I hate intermittent issues I can't recreate in the shop. You hate them, CMC Tech, and we as customers hate them because inevitably you'll bring it in and it won't fail. And the guy will say, well, it seems fine to me. Must be in your head, lady. Or if it's somebody nice like CMC Tech, he'll go, I just don't know what to say. I can't help you until it happens. I need to see it happening. That B. Swift is pointing out might not be a bad idea to try a Bluetooth keyboard. Maybe it's just that keyboard port is failing or loose, the USB port. Use a Bluetooth keyboard, it might eliminate the problem entirely. Those cute little Bluetooth keyboards Apple sells might be worth a try. Better if you could borrow one. Eric calling from Germany. Hi, Eric. Are you on Skype?
Yes, I'm on Skype.
Great to have you. Thanks for joining. I hear you great.
Yeah. Hi, Leo. I called in last year. Perhaps you remember me. I sent you a couple of postcards from Myanmar.
I did. Thank you.
Yeah, and I do the same thing again. I fly tomorrow to Bangkok and then to Myanmar.
So tell us, tell everybody what you're doing, because it's really cool.
Yeah. I travel to Myanmar, basically, and I go to the countryside. To visit farmers, and I take pictures of them, and I have a small Canon printer. That printer can print postcard-sized pictures, and I print them out on the spot. So the children are always very surprised when they see the printer, because it works directly in front of their eyes, and I give them the pictures, and they cannot believe that they can keep them. That's quite funny.
Isn't that neat? So you go out in the field and to areas where people really haven't seen a lot of technology, and not only do you go out with a digital camera, you're printing these pictures, and you're giving it to them. And especially kids, they just must flip their lids to see those pictures.
Yeah, it's crazy. I started it in Vietnam, because in Vietnam, I took a lot of photographs on, on funerals.
Yeah,
and at this point, I realized that lots of the people, they have, especially from the older ones, they have only pictures taken when they die.
When they're dead. Oh my!
Yeah, so that's a little bit too late.
Yeah,
so
let's get them when they're still alive. They're much more interesting photos. Yeah.
And that's why I started my little project, and I want to make some ebooks out of it. So I would like to ask you. What's the best way to do it? Is it blurb, or what would you recommend?
So, yeah, he wants to make ebooks out of these beautiful images. And by the way, he sent me images. I can't remember if it's Vietnam or Myanmar. I think it was Myanmar you sent me the images from, and they were just...
Yeah, I lived in Vietnam, but I did the thing in Myanmar, and I do it again.
Yeah, just gorgeous.
In 2012 again.
So you want good color. You mentioned blurb, and blurb is excellent. So he wants to make books out of these, coffee table books. But, you know, blurb is just one of many now. I mean, this has become a very big category where you upload your pictures, you get software that will, turn it into a book. You do the layout online, and then you print out this book, and they send it to you, and it's just gorgeous. So when we come back, we're going to talk about a few of the other choices. I still like blurb a lot. blurb.com.
Cover your eyes so you don't know.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. There's so many ways to publish beautiful color coffee table books. You know, in fact, even people who are just using, for instance, iPhoto or Picasa or one of the desktop solutions can print books. So the question is, how good are these books? How good is the developing, the printing? You know, because there are, you know, there's fine art and there's kind of just junky, you know, Costco style printing. And what are you going to get? What's going to be the best coffee table books? Blurb, one of the reasons Blurb, I think, is so successful is that it from the very earliest days said, we're going to do really good quality publishing. We're going to make a very good, good-looking book. And I think that they still do the best. They do. They're one of the few that does what's called full bleed, which is they go from edge to edge on the page. And that's a nice effect. A lot of these, you have to have a border. You also want to look at what's the software that you're going to be using. A lot of them have programs you can download and actually make the book on your desktop at your leisure and then upload it. And that's a nice feature. Blurb does that as well. I'm wondering if the chat room, and I should have asked them, if you guys have any suggestions for alternatives to Blurb, anything that you've used or you've seen, you know, because when I do a Google search for this, you know, printing color books, there's quite a few choices. There's dozens of companies doing this, and I just don't know what the best are. As I said, I like Blurb, but there's instantpublishercolor.com, enchantedlearning.com, uprinting.com. I mean, it's just, there's Lulu, of course, has been around a long time. Sagan? Caliber, yeah, that's another one. So there's quite a few. Artful Dragon. There's quite a few of these. I'm going to say, given that I haven't tried them all, and the only one that I have tried and I know does a great job, I would say just stick with Blurb. I think, Eric, you're on the right track. Now, one of the things Blurb doesn't help you with, or I don't think they help you with, is selling them. And that might be another issue as well. I'm not sure if you want to sell them as well. Oh, he said ebooks, didn't he, Mark? And, you know, I might have misunderstood. I thought he wanted physical books, but you're right. He said ebooks. So Caliber would be a good choice. You know, Amazon has their own self-publishing arm. And one of the nice things about using Amazon is you're going to be on the Amazon store. They're going to help you publish it. So that might be, it's called Create Space. If what you're looking for is both hardcover and ebooks, Create Space, I think, is probably the right way to go. And this is Amazon's way of doing it. And they have the tools. They sell it for you. They pay you a royalty. And they have all, you know, distribution, of course, throughout the world, thanks to Amazon. So this is another very good choice, I think. CreateSpace.com. Good luck, Eric. That's just awesome. That's just really cool. I'd love to see more when you get back. 8888 Ask Leo. Vaughn is in Aliso Viejo, California. Hey, Vaughn. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm making a short documentary for film class, and my topic is on 2D versus 3D movies. And I just wanted your opinion on what you think about the 3D movies in the market right now, especially in cinematic and home media, and where do you think it will go in the next 10 years?
What a great subject, and one that's fairly controversial. I am one of those Luddites, those knee-jerk reactionary types who hates 3D. But partly that's because 3D is difficult for me because I don't have full binocular vision. Now, I was able to see some amazing 3D. I went to Universal Studios. They have a tour, and they have a number of amusement park rides that use 3D projection. Most recently, the Transformers 3D, where they have IMAX-sized screens. You're in a physical car moving around like a normal ride, but what it moves you to is a position where there's some real stuff, and then there's 3D projections. Very effective, very realistic, great for an amusement park ride. But that's kind of my problem with 3D motion pictures. They tend to be more amusement park rides than actual, in my opinion, artistic creations. And I think 3D, in my mind, distracts somewhat. The idea behind 3D is let's make this a more immersive, realistic experience. And I understand that. But I think there are some significant problems. I'd point you to an article. I'm trying to remember who wrote this. Somebody authoritative in the field, and I'll see if I can find it, where he talks about the difficulty with 3D is that it's not the way 3D is done in motion pictures. It's not natural. That it's not true 3D in the sense that, you know, with binocular vision, we get 3D. We understand depth and dimension in the real world, but only up to a certain distance. Past, I think, 10 or 15 feet, because of the distance, the parallax is insufficient to give us true 3D. Our brain does the work. The brain understands what's in front of it. And in my opinion, this is the problem with 3D movies, is they force the brain into a state where it's trying to figure out what's going on in a very unnatural way. And so I don't like 3D. I think, you know, many people get headaches from it. I think there are other issues. For instance, the 3D technologies that we use right now, the screen is half the brightness.
Yeah.
Right? Because the left eye sees half and the right eye sees half.
Yeah.
And so and wearing the glasses takes away from it. So my opinion is 3D in the motion pictures is a gimmick. It's an amusement park ride. I want to go to a movie to be immersed in, and I like the idea of immersion, but this is exactly the opposite of the effect you get from 3D in the theaters today.
Yeah, I think that the immersive experience is for IMAX mostly.
Yeah, and IMAX 3D is, of course, the best 3D.
Yeah.
You know, I'll tell you what I hope for is a – and this is, by the way, it's interesting. James Cameron, who is a big advocate of 3D, he made Avatar, the first really successful 3D movie. And I saw it in 3D, and I keep going to 3D movies hoping that they won't distract me, bother me, give me a headache, you know, have snowflakes falling in my lap or sticks whapping me in the face. And they all do it. Even James Cameron, who's smart enough to know that I'm not going to – he doesn't want to do too many gimmicks, still does the gimmicky shots. Because if you're making a 3D movie – the audience expects a little bit of gimmickry. And that's, to me, that's exactly the opposite of great storytelling of great movies. However, Cameron also supports, along with 3D, double speed or double frame rate or triple frame rate. Instead of 24 frames, 48 frames or even 96 frames per second. And higher resolutions, 4K and more. And I think that's the future, because that is immersive, because what happens is your brain does the 3D naturally when it's looking at something that's hyper realistic, that doesn't look like a movie but looks like real life. Your brain automatically makes it 3D. So to me, that's really the future, is higher frame rates, higher resolutions on the movie screen. Don't worry about 3D. The brain can make it 3D. You know, look at a 2D object more than 10 feet away. It's indistinguishable from a 3D object.
Yeah, because there was also another article where they were saying that Peter Jackson was filming The Hobbit in 48 frames per second. So I think I'm kind of looking forward to see
that's
how that
the
looks.
Future. And he's doing that, by the way, with RED cameras in 4K. So the problem really is that these file sizes are so massive that most theaters can't project it. So you'll go to a theater, you'll see it downsampled. But once the theaters are able to do 4K resolution movies at 48 frames per second, forget 3D. You're gonna think that's an immersive experience, because it's going to be like you're looking at real life. And at that point, let the brain do the 3D. I don't need a snowflake falling in my lap.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. That, and by the way, lots of people argue against that. And even Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guy, says I'm crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's some of your paper there. I'll see if I can find that article. You might have even seen it. It's an interesting article about what's wrong with 3D. And it makes, I think, a physiological argument that cannot be denied. Our show today brought to you by our friends at Carbonite.com. Thanks for the call. Good luck with the paper, Vaughn. I think that's a great subject. And you know what? It's one of those things that probably is a debate topic more than... There's maybe not right or wrong. It's just a debate topic.
30 seconds.
I only have 30 seconds? All right. Well, I'll talk about Carbonite a little bit later on. And while I'm doing that, I'm going to see if I can find this article, because it is the article, to me, that undermines the whole idea of 3D. But I'll see if I can find it. By the way, 3D not doing so well in the theaters. It's not. I don't think that the movie companies have yet declared victory. 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. You disagree? Call me. We'll talk about it. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You know about our phone system. I talk about this all the time. When we moved to the brick house, we did not have any ideas about what we were going to do. I thought I was going to buy a PBX. Put it in the basement, and I was not looking forward to that. Our IT director, Russell Tammany, is brilliant, said, well, I've installed this Ring Central for a bunch of people. You might want to try it. And boy, am I glad we did. When we get a new employee, we have 25 employees. It's about $20 per employee per month. You know, could be more or less, depending on features and so forth. When we get a new employee, we give them a phone, they plug it in the wall, and then we're done. The phone tree, everything's done over the internet. It's a cloud-based phone system. Zero startup costs, no PBX hardware, 800-543-9980 to try it. And by the way, when you buy your first phone, you'll get a second phone free, and that's up to 20 phones. So that's a really good deal. Or you can go to ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. Ringcentral.com, promo code TWIT. This is the cloud-based phone system that is such a good solution. I cannot recommend it more highly. I love it. A year in, we are thrilled. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, da, da. 8888 Ask Leo. Got a question, a comment, a suggestion? You want to talk high tech? I found the article I was referring to about 3D film. And if you don't mind, I'd like to just read it and tell you this. This will say, now you may love 3D movies, and that's fine. I'm not trying to convince you otherwise. I'm just, this to me, this encapsulates my problem with 3D film. And it's a Roger Ebert piece from the Chicago Sun-Times that he wrote last year. It was actually from January of last year. Why 3D doesn't work and never will. Case closed. Now, it's enough for me that Roger Ebert thinks that, probably one of our best film critics. But he's not even speaking for himself. He's quoting Academy Award-winning film editor Walter Murch, the most respected film editor and sound designer of the modern era. He edited Apocalypse Now, won an Oscar for it. He did the sound for Apocalypse Now. He won Oscars for The English Patient. He was the first to use Final Cut to edit a movie, Cold Mountain. This guy is he did The Godfather. I mean, this guy is amazing. So he wrote to Roger Ebert. I wrote him a letter and said, I read your review of Green Hornet, and though I haven't seen the film, I had to agree with your comments about 3D. So here's what Walter Murch, this is why Walter Murch thinks 3D is a no-go in the movie industry. He says the 3D image is dark. We talked about that. About a camera stop darker. He said, I edited one 3D film back in the 80s. Remember Captain EO, the Michael Jackson movie they had that at Disneyland? That's Walter Murch edited that. He said he noticed that horizontal movement in 3D strobes much sooner than it does in 2D. This was true then, and it's still true now. He says he thinks it has something to do with the amount of brain power dedicated to studying the edges of things. The more conscious we are of edges, the earlier this weird effect, strobing, kicks in. And that bugs you. When you see it, you'll know it. He says the biggest problem, though, with 3D is the convergence focus issue. Now, this is a little kind of technically tricky, but see if you can get this. He says the audience has to focus their eyes at the plane of the screen, whatever that is, 80 feet away. Where, it depends where you are in the theater, right? That's constant. That's not moving. But your eyes must converge at different distances depending on the 3D object, maybe 10, maybe 60, then 120, depending on what the illusion is. So Walter Murch says, 3D films require us to focus at one distance and converge at another. And 600 million years of evolution has never presented this problem before. All living things with eyes have always focused and converged at the same point. If you look at a salt shaker, 6 feet away, your eyeballs converge at 6 feet, you focus at 6 feet. That's normal. You look out the window, you look at a mountain, your eyes converge and your focus converges at the mountain. That's just how human eyes work. We can do this, he says. 3D films wouldn't work if we couldn't do it, but it's like tapping your head and rubbing your stomach at the same time. It's difficult. So the CPU of our perceptual brain has to work extra hard, which is why after 20 minutes or so of 3D movies, many people get headaches. They're doing something that 600 million years of evolution never prepared them for. This is a deep problem which no amount of technical tweaking can fix. He also says it's harder to edit, takes more to edit. You have to pay attention to this. So he says, dark, small, strobey, headache-inducing, and alienating. And this is the one I was kind of referring to. He says, 3D films remind the audience that they're in a certain perspective relationship to the image. It's almost a trick, whereas if the film story really grips somebody in the audience, and this is a guy who knows because he's edited the greatest films of all time, They're in the picture in a kind of dreamlike, spaceless space. A good story gives you more dimensionality than you can ever cope with. But then the 3D just pulls you right out of it. So, he says, in summary, dark, small, strobey, headache-inducing, and alienating. Oh, and expensive. The question is, how long will it take people to realize and get fed up? Hey, if Walter Murch, he's backing my point. Now, I know there's debate about 3D movies, and if you like them, fine. But I wouldn't, unless you've got a real investment in 3D, I'm not sure I'd worry about 3D on a TV or buying glasses or any of that stuff. There's so many things that are more important, including, in my opinion, the quality of the image. That's what really matters. Michael's in Paris, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Leo. Hi, Leo. Thanks for accepting my call.
My pleasure. By the way, I just noticed that our Myanmar photographer is in the chat room as Web2683, and he wants people to know about his GoFundMe project to take these childhood pictures. It's GoFundMe.com. We'll put this in the show notes, Eric. GoFundMe.com. Project Childhood Memories 2012. You can do a search for it. And he's looking for people to help him pay for this project, which is great. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Michael. Appreciate your patience. Leo Laporte.
No problem. I just reinstalled Windows 7 64-bit on my laptop, HP. DB7 laptop.
Okay.
Attempted to install Zorin 5.2. After rebooting, I expected to have a choice of operating systems, but that did not happen.
What is Zorin? I don't know that.
Zorin is one of the Linux derivatives.
Okay, so what you did is you installed Windows, then you installed Linux, and in theory you would have a boot manager now when you turn on the machine that would give you a choice, but in fact you don't. You only see Windows, I presume.
Right, I do.
Got it.
Now, assuming that it was not installed, or maybe there was something wrong with that particular.
Did the Linux distro that you were installing ask you whether you wanted to install a boot manager?
No.
Okay.
No.
Normally, when you do this, you got some choices. You can, of course, have the Linux overwrite Windows and get rid of it. You obviously didn't want that. You wanted what we call a dual boot machine, where you have a choice when you first turn it on which operating system to use. But in order for that to happen, normally on a normal Windows machine, when you turn it on, the master boot record loads, and it says, okay, go here, this is where Windows is, and start booting the machine. What has to happen is the master boot record has to be modified to say, no, don't jump to Windows, jump to a boot manager, and let the boot manager choose where to go next, right?
Right.
So, in the normal case of installing a Linux, you'll be given that choice, overwrite Windows or do a dual boot. And in the dual boot process, it has to modify the master boot record and set up a boot manager. It sounds like it didn't do that. But all is not lost, because there are boot managers that you can add after the fact. And the one that I recommend generally is called GAG.
GAG.
Don't be deceived by the name. I think it's a Spanish acronym. But if it's a SourceForge project, so it's open source, gag.sf.net. And what's nice about GAG is you can do it after the fact. So what you'll do is you'll download GAG, run it, and then it will look and see what operating systems are on the hard drive, and then modify the boot record appropriately.
Okay.
So it's an after the fact. Had Zorin done its thing properly, and maybe it did ask you and you just didn't notice, it would have installed Grub or something like that and given you the choice. But having not done that, it's a little hard to go back and do it by hand. So GAG will let you do that and make the change. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I had way too much to drink, and I need to get sober. So let's go get our Grub on.
I don't think they're talking about Grub the Bootloader there. I don't think. Although it is kind of time for, what does it call it? Fourth meal? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 asking. There's somebody in the chat room asked me a good question. Is it a good idea to upgrade to Windows 8 if you have a Windows 7 machine? You certainly can. Windows 8 will run fine on anything that could run Vista or Windows 7. The question is whether that's a worthwhile upgrade. In my opinion, no. I really think the benefit and the value of Windows 8 comes when you have touch. I think Microsoft designed this for touch. I was always suspect the idea that you could have an interface that would work equally well on touch and non-touch devices. It just doesn't, you know, it's either touch or not to me. And Windows 8 is great with touch. It even makes sense with touch. And I think that's part of the problem is that some of the features of Windows 8, like the idea that along the right-hand side, there's this, whoops, I don't know what happened. I'm just sliding this. Oh, yeah, it turned itself off. Along the right-hand side, there's this charms bar that has search, share, start, devices, and settings. In a touch environment, the idea of sliding your finger in from the right bezel to bring up a charms bar makes a lot of sense. With a mouse, it's just a little bit difficult to get the mouse in the right place to get that charms bar to slide open. It's more touch-centric. And so it's my opinion, Windows 8 on existing Windows 7 stuff is fine. I've been using it that way, and it's fine. But I don't think it really sings until you have touch. And I noticed that almost all of the new Windows 8-specific machines from Dell, Lenovo, HP, and everybody else, they're all touch. Even the Dell XPS 1, which is a big screen kind of multimedia monitor, has touch. And there are just times when this interface just begs to be stroked and squeezed and pinched. I'm going to stop right there. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We were talking to Michael in Paris, California. He installed a Linux on top of his Windows install, and now he can't get the dual boot to work. We got a great article, which I'm going to put in the show notes, from a website called Make Tech Easier, how to easily fix Window and Linux boot problems with a super Grub disk. And so that's where the Grub song came from, where Grub is another boot manager like Gag. Gag and Grub, they don't belong together, do they? Super Grub Disk is something that will fix a screwed-up dual boot. So that's what you want. It'll repair the dual boot so that you can go back and get both operating systems. So this is probably a more modern way than Gag. It's called Super Grub. You could probably Google Super Grub and find it pretty quickly. Thanks, Michael. Appreciate it. Jeff in L.A., Los Angeles, I guess. Hi, Jeff. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Oh, Leo, it's me, Tim. I'm sorry.
Oh, hi, Tim.
Hi. I got a question. I'm going to be doing a documentary, and it's going to be out of this country, out of the U.S., and what my partner and I are going to do is record, you know, interview people, interview officials and whatnot, and what we want to do is somehow transfer the files from out of the country back to servers, back to one server here in the U.S., two in the U.S., one in the Netherlands, and probably do something in the clouds. We were thinking about doing FTP, but a friend from the Mac store said, yeah, don't use FTP, he told me to, I guess, try to find the, get the desktop on top of your desktop, so...
No, he's crazy. If you're transferring large files, and of course video is going to be big files...
Right.
You want to do it as fast as possible. You want to do as little overhead as possible. So, yes, you could have remote desktop sharing would make it easier for you, I guess, because you could kind of make it feel like you're dragging from one to the other. But the point is that it's got a lot of overhead. Just use file transfer protocol. Better yet, secure file transfer protocol. That way it's encrypted and protected. You could also use an SSH tunnel to copy files. Mm-hmm. I often use something called SCP, which is a Linux command. It's a secure copy protocol that is basically SSH. All of that will be lighter weight, lower overhead. You don't want to spend any bits displaying a remote screen, because that just takes away from how fast you're going to transfer the files over, right?
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So I guess my other question is then is, you know, instead of using Windows or Mac, they're using Ruby for their operating system.
Well, Ruby's not an operating system. It's a programming language available on Windows and Mac.
Oh, okay. So I wouldn't have any issues then.
No, I mean, Ruby requires something else, Linux, Windows, or Mac running. I don't know of a Ruby operating system. But you're using Windows or Mac? What are you using?
I'm going to be using Windows.
Okay.
Max.
So Mac has FTP, command line FTP built in, and there's also some very good FTP programs. I like Panic Software's Transmit. It's called Transmit. And you know it would be great? Oh, not Ruby, Wubi. W-U-B-I, is that what you said?
I think so.
Ruby's a language. Wubi is a way to install Linux on Windows. Thank you. Zerobius in the chat room translated that for me. Oh, Wubi. I thought you said Wubi.
Wubi.
Yeah. In any event, Ruby's great because, Wubi is great because that means they're using Linux, which means they will also have SFTP and SCP command line availability.
Oh, cool.
So it's going to be very simple. I would suggest if you're on a Mac, get Transmit from Panic. You can make a little icon on your desktop that is the place you're going. And you can do it. You can when you set up the icon, you could say, I want to use Secure File Transfer Protocol. Then you just drag the file onto that icon. It initiates the transaction, sends the file. You can go to lunch, and you'll be fine.
And it wouldn't take, I have, up to a terabyte of video. It wouldn't take, like a week or two to...
Yeah, a terabyte will take a week. Do the math. As a matter of fact, yes. All you have to do is do the math. Well, yeah, where are you? You know, you're at a hotel in Greece, and they've got 3 bits up. You know, I mean, it depends on, of course, how fast your connection is. If you're able to go somewhere, a business with a good high-speed internet, let's say they've got astounding 5 megabits per second up. That means you'll be doing let's be generous. Let's say you can do a megabyte a second. That's 60 megabytes a minute, 360 megabytes an hour. How many terabytes? Do the math. It's going to take a long time. Take 3 hours to do a gigabyte. So that's good. 3,000 hours to do a terabyte. How many hours? How many days is 3,000 hours? Sending video is very costly. These are big files. I think we're so spoiled now because I watch Netflix. That's streaming, right? It shouldn't be too hard. Well, there's a couple of things. First of all, that's very compressed. Second of all, it's downloads, not uploads. Uploads are always much slower than downloads. Web 6497 did the math. It's 125 days to transfer a terabyte, even on a very fast connection. How long do you have to make this movie? 88, 88, 88, ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, the Gizwiz, just around the corner. FedEx a hard drive, much more bandwidth. How long would a terabyte take? Too long. But you know, Alex Lindsay does this stuff all the time. I'm sure he just ships hard drives. Our show brought to you by Gazelle today. Did you see something this week that you wanted to buy? Like a dozen things you wanted to buy, and you're probably wondering, well, how do I afford my gadget habit? Well, I'll tell you one way to do it. Gazelle, you know, one of our chat moderators, Dan, always has the newest phone. And I asked Dan, I said, Dan, how do you do that? And he said, well, I eBay all my old stuff. And that's a good way to do it, except, you know, you got to have a lot of time and dedication. You got to take pictures. You got to deal with fraudulent bidders, et cetera, et cetera. Just this is the way to do it. Dan, are you using Gazelle now? I bet you are. If you are one of those people who just has to have the latest thing, Gazelle is a godsend. They will buy your old iPhone, cell phone, iPad, iPod, old Macintoshes, even Mac Minis, iMacs, and Mac Pros, and they'll give you cash for it. So let's say, you're looking at, you got a third generation iPad. And Apple says, hey, by the way, that's the old stuff. What am I going to do with that third generation iPad? Let's see, actually, mine's AT&T, 64 gigs. How much is that? Thank goodness, $495. That's how much they'll give you for it. Oh, it's going to pay for the new iPad. Now, you just throw it in a box. They pay the shipping on anything worth more than a buck. They delete the data for you, which is fantastic. This is such a good idea. Oh, and by the way, they'll send you a check. They'll give you a PayPal credit. Or if you do a lot of Amazon purchasing, this is the best deal. Get an Amazon gift card because they add 5% to the value. So they're going to throw in some more bucks. Don't ship that box till it's full. Oh, one other nice feature. It's a 30-day quote. So you have 30 days to send that device in. That means you can get a quote on the iPad today, order your new iPad when it comes in a few weeks, transfer the data over, and then send Gazelle the old one. You don't have to send it right away. You got 30 days. Got to tell you, it's always worth getting the quote now, even if you're not sure, because I can tell you one thing. These things are not gaining value. They're not going to be more valuable tomorrow. Maybe in 100 years when they're antiques, but not tomorrow. Take advantage of it right now. Gazelle's a great service. We use it a lot. Great way to upgrade to the new iPad, the new iPhone. Trade in your iPad and get a Windows RT Surface. Whatever it is, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E, gazelle.com. Highly recommended. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Taking your calls at 8888-ASK-LEO. In about 15 minutes, it'll be Dick DiBartolo, Mad's Maddest Writer, and the Gizwiz with his Gadget of the Week. Meanwhile, Roger in Wilmington, Delaware. You're next. Hi, Roger. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yes, thank you. I just went to a smartphone quite somewhat recently, and I fear that I am infected with malware. Our smartphones, I have the Android operating system.
What makes you, generally speaking, no? What makes you think you are infected?
When I was newer than I am now, I was just doing the third or fourth text message. I had something for sale on Craig's list, and the guy that I was texting might have been flaky, and right after I did a text to him, a text came in to me. And it was a partial sentence, and it wasn't, you know, pornography or any of that sort of stuff. It just one complete sentence, and it says, click here to download. And
yeah, you so do want to avoid that. It's not malware, probably. It's probably is, however, a message designed to either trick you into doing something that will cost you, that you'll get a big... So check your bill from your phone company next month. And make sure that you don't have a big charge on it. And then, secondarily, there isn't a lot of malware. There have been occurrences, very rare, isolated instances of malware on Android. But it is not widespread. Google, generally what happens is you download something from the Play Store. Usually it's like Russian wallpaper, that kind of thing. It's suspect to begin with. And you download it, and instead it installs something on your system that you don't want. Here's what I would suggest. I think you were just getting text spam. Did you click the link and download the file?
Well, nothing. Yeah, I did, but nothing happened. And
probably because most of the time Android has a setting that by default is turned on that says you can't download third-party apps. You have to get them from the Play Store. If you have turned that off, I don't know, there's a checkbox that says, allow me to download stuff anywhere I darn well please, then there's some potential, and that's what they were hoping, because you click that link, it would download what's called an APK file, and it would install it. You'd have to go through some steps, though. You'd have to say, install this file, and so forth. Since it didn't, and you didn't, you're fine.
Pardon me for interrupting, but I clicked on the space there where it says, you know, to download, and nothing happened. And I did it three times, and nothing happened.
Okay, next time, don't do that. If you get something suspicious, so you're getting text spam. They're trying to get you to download and install something. It didn't happen. You're okay. Now, here's what I would do. There's a free program on the Play Store that probably everybody who uses Android should have. It's called Lookout, and it will scan everything and make sure you're okay.
Okay. one further question. I'm very, very, very concerned. My smartphone is also a handheld computer, and therefore I presume it has an IP address.
That's correct.
And so if I just put in a new SIM card, which is like starting over, as I understand it, would I get a new IP address?
That's an interesting question. I don't think so, but I don't know. I have no idea. Your IP address is meaningless anyway. There's no reason to obscure or obfuscate your IP address. It's visible to every single place you go.
Well, it has to be. Yeah, that's how an email and various other things come to me instead of you.
Yeah.
I thank you.
Right. I mean, so it's knowing your IP address is not of value to anybody.
Well, the point would be if I took out the SIM card and replaced it, whatever was, if anything was installed on the machine. I'd be starting over, and I would
No, you wouldn't. If you want to, if you think you got malware, the best thing to do is to reset the go into the settings, into the security settings on your phone, and reset it, which would erase everything and start from scratch, just like you brought the home, the store home, the phone home from the store. But I don't think you got malware because nothing executed. You'd see some interaction if that. So again, the lesson learned. That was spam text. Don't click links on random messages because that, you know, that's potentially risky. But in order for that to happen, you'd have to say, allow me to install apps from third-party sources. That's a checkbox that is not checked by default. So you'd have to go into your settings, into your security settings, check that box, say, yeah, I want to go somewhere else to get file. I do that because I do download beta software and so forth. But for most people, just leave the Play Store as your default, your one and only place you can get stuff. That'll protect you somewhat. And then get Lookout, which is free on the Play Store, play.google.com. It's called Lookout. It's free. The reason it's free is they want you to buy a premium service from them. You don't need that. Just use the free one. Keep it running on your phone. It will scan everything you get before, and it will also scan what you got right now. You're fine. I don't think you have to worry, Roger. But I think you're right to worry. I think that was the right reaction was, whoops, what have I done? I think it's funny that you did it three times, however. Gee, this malware didn't install. Let me try again. I'm actually thrilled that you didn't call and say, you know, I'm trying to get this malware installed and it won't work. Maybe you could help me. But I think you're all right because you would have seen some more interactions, I think. It just doesn't do it by itself without any help. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. George in Santa Monica, California. You're next. Hi, George.
Good afternoon, Leo. I have Dickie D's website for his drop cam.
Oh, yeah? You're watching Disneyland?
I can see it on my PC downstairs, but on my iPad... It comes up, but the screen never opens up.
Yeah, I think it may require flash, which, of course, isn't supported. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Wrap around, take a hold of my heart. What a feeling. Here's the
lead. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I can't have
a little flash dancing. Dick, put your clothes back on.
I can't. I'm too free.
Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer. He's a free spirit, and he's also a gadget hound and joins us every week to share a gadget with us. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how you doing?
I'm a little worried about you. We were checking your boat on the drop cam. Isn't there a big storm, Hurricane Sammy something?
As a matter of fact, it is so funny because in the last 8 minutes, I changed the gadget of the day because people are emailing me and how's the boat? And I suddenly thought, I need to do an emergency gadget. And I look over into my workshop and I am charging. This is one of the storm preps I'm doing. I am charging my wagon, spelled WGAN, Power Dome NX.
Is that what the kids call it today? Charging your wagon?
Yeah. I'm charging my wagon for emergency.
What wagon would that be? You have like a little red wagon? What do you mean you're charging your wagon?
No. This is a little emergency unit that you it sells for $95, but I am now recommending that people look at the Power Dome EX It's $30 more, but this is what it is. It has a 600 amp battery, so if your car or boat stalls, you can recharge it. It has a built-in compressor. It has a 400 watt inverter. It has two AC outlets. So if the power goes out, you can plug in, you know, low voltage things, your TV, your a couple of lamps.
So is it a gas generator?
No.
It's just a big battery.
Just has a big battery. It also
so you're
has,
charging it now so that you'll have power if the power goes out later.
That is exactly right. It has a high-intensity LED light, a built-in AM/FM radio, a little USB phone charger so you can run your phone off it.
This is cool.
It's pretty neat. You know, you could if you're running out here in the city, they're scaring everybody. CVS sent me, our local drug chain. Rush over here now.
Quick,
to
get your prescriptions. You may never emerge again.
I know.
That's not nice.
Christie, the governor of Jersey, was saying you need 3 days of food for each person in your family.
Do you think it'll be that bad?
You know what? I'm not planning on it being that bad. So Mother Nature, if you're listening,
try not.
Please not make me look too foolish.
Do you have a couple of weeks' worth of pineapple upside down cake?
I do. I have eight frozen pineapple upside down cakes and three cans of dog food for Maggie and three more cans of dog food for Dennis and I. So we're set.
Yeah. They say people in your house. They don't mention your pets. They need help. They need to eat.
Yes. No, one newscaster said, take your pets out of the backyard.
I'm going to leave them out there.
Oh,
Ozzy just loves hurricanes. He loves his ears flap in the wind. It's great. He just loves that. I mean,
they stop short of take the fish out of the Hudson River because they'll get seasick with all the rocking.
Now, if you had that little doggy dome that you had last week, he could just peer his nose out at the hurricane. That'd be fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
exactly.
When is it expected to make the landfall?
The winds are supposed to start tomorrow night, late Sunday night. The brunt of the storm will be Monday into Tuesday.
All right. Well, I hope everything's okay.
Well, thank you, sir.
And
once again, what you're looking for is the Power Dome EX.
Charge your Power Dome EX, as the kids say.
If you're buying an emergency gadget.
And you can see Dick's boat sink on Sunday. If you go, he has a drop cam, the SS Gisneyland, and he's got a little drop cam on the boat. See, actually, it's in the boat, though, so we wouldn't see the boat sink. Yes, we'd see the water go up the window, right? Slowly rising.
Well, first of all, if I can see my camera, I know I have AC power. I know the route is working. I know there's electricity.
That's a good point.
Yeah. And from the pilings, I can tell what the tide is doing. So there you go.
So far, so good.
Yes, so far, so good. Now, if the storm comes, I don't know what I'll do.
Dick DiBartolo, gizwiz.biz. Go there. There's all sorts of stuff, including there's Mad Magazine memorabilia he sells on that website. He also gives you a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine in the What the Heck Is It contest. Gizwiz, gizwiz.biz. Great to talk to you, Dick.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, we'll talk again real soon. We do a podcast together, the Gizwiz Show, every Tuesday at about 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time on twit.tv. Fun stuff. Not only a lot of gadgets, I also, in fact, I'm so excited.
What'd you get?
I do this segment, it's called Crap I Bought at Sky Mall. And
and 10 more helicopters.
I got the head spa. This is a state-of-the-art Euphoria helmet that you put on. And
I cannot wait.
That's going to be good. You're going to wish you were here so you could wear the head spa, too.
I bet.
It massages and relaxes. And man, the guy wearing it, he just looks so happy.
It looks like Atlas, Atlas.
It's a patented Italian design.
Oh, so gotta be good.
That's gotta be good.
It gotta be good. Head spa marinara.
That'll be on Tuesday. Thank you, Dick.
Take care.
All right, TJ in New York. Are you getting ready, TJ?
Yes, I am.
Big storm a coming.
Yeah, things are interesting around here.
Yeah, I bet. Well, what can I do for you right now? Hello?
Over my iPhone 5, but they don't seem to be able to get one in stock considering moving to Android.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of people looking at the iPhone 5 are thinking, I want a bigger screen, or I don't want to have to buy a new set of proprietary cables. I'd like to use a simple micro USB port. I think Android maybe is more mature now, maybe is usable. The Galaxy S3 is getting a lot of ads. That's certainly stimulating a lot of interest. I used a Galaxy S3 for a long time. Did buy an iPhone 5. It's my job. Used it for about 3 weeks, and now I've returned to the Galaxy. In this case, not the S3, but a more recent Galaxy that's coming out, I think, later this week, the Galaxy Note 2, which is maybe a little big for most people. It's a 5.5-inch screen, very much like a Galaxy S3. It's Android. It's the latest version, Jelly Bean. I think Android, in many respects, competes very well with the iPhone. Cameras are very similar, but you have more choice. You have larger screens, better battery life. One of the things I love about the Galaxy S3 and the Galaxy Note is I can just take the back off and put a new battery in. The batteries are not too expensive to buy, and I usually, when I buy a new Galaxy phone or a Samsung phone or most any Android phone, I'll always buy one or two extra batteries and an external charger. And, you know, that way, most of these phones will get through a day, but not much more. If I'm on a trip or I just need more battery life, I can pocket a fairly small battery and pop it in. You can't do that on an iPhone. If you've invested a lot in apps on the iPhone, that might be a disadvantage. Although I have to say that, there's some software that'll tell you how much you've spent. I think it's called App Brain, how much you've spent on your Android software. And I have Android and iOS apps, and I've spent quite a bit, I think, on iOS apps. But when I look at how much I've spent on Android apps, it's only about $80. A lot of Android apps are free. It's not that I don't use Android apps a lot. I do, and I have hundreds of them on my system. But the total cost so far is only about $80, which is not bad. So I don't think that's necessarily a reason not to change. I'm a big fan, and certainly what I would do is I would go to your carrier and look at it, play with it. And the Galaxy S3 to me is, I think, arguably the best phone in the market. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.